Right, yeah. And they called the whole family, and they took the picture. You see the one, two, the third lady from the left. They used to call her Bibi. Bibi was married to one of the Menachem's brothers,
Menachem Daniel.
Menachem Daniel. Yeah, his brother. She was married, I think, to his brother, and she was widowed at an early age, and she didn't have any children, and. At the time, the law, they used to go according to the Islamic law, a widow doesn't get anything if she's without any children. And through her,
No
if she has
children,
no
right?
children, she gets nothing. So she fought through the courts, of course, with the support of her family.
What is this woman's name?
Her name, I don't know what her, they used to call her Bibi. The
Bibi,
whole family
okay.
used to call her Bibi, and she used to have a big duck, and the duck always used to sit on her lap. And they used to all congregate in her house. She had a beautiful big house, and very wealthy lady, and they used to congregate around her and around the duck. And everybody remembers the duck, even my
Duck,
auntie.
D-U-C-K.
Duck, yes,
Ah.
the duck, swan, I think she had, or something, a swan or something. And the duck used to know, got used to her. She was her little pet. And even my aunt, the surviving members of my family still remember the duck, and they used to remember they were little kids. They are now in their 80s, and they remember going to her house, and she used to sit on the chair, and she had, of course, she was an old lady by then, and she used to have the duck on her lap. And through her, the law in Iraq to protect widows was changed. And the guy who changed it was a Jewish guy who was a judge and a professor of law. His name was Davood Samra, David Samra.
Okay.
And everybody used to know him in Iraq. And he was a big judge. And I think through him, he changed the law which gave the widow, even though she was without any children, he improved the law. She gets a third. And when she died, all her wealth was distributed to the family, children, grandchildren, like
Right.
nephews, great nephews, nieces, whatever. And my grandmother was one of the people who benefited from her will, from her will and wealth.
Yeah.
And you see all these people in the picture, they all have a piece of land in Iraq, but
Because of her or
because of
separate?
her, of course, because of her, and because without her, they all left everything there and came. Yeah, I mean, died or whatever. Yeah,
Now, what
yeah.
property do you still have in Iraq?
Well, we have a house there. We used to have a synagogue. My grandfather and his brothers built a synagogue, which was called the Masri Synagogue, and which was confiscated by the government because they tried to build. To build a road there. So before I was born, the synagogue was already confiscated, and the land of the synagogue and all the prayer books and the Sefarim and whatever went to different synagogues. And I remember when we left in January, 1st of January 1972, my father asked me, Erbasri, if he could take with him, carry a Sefer Torah, because we didn't escape. We were given passports. We were one of the lucky ones who left Iraq by passport. He wanted to take with him a Sefer, with him in his suitcase. But me, Erbasri, was worried about my father just in case he gets caught in the airport by customs,
Yeah.
and unfortunately nobody searched our suitcases.
Right.
Yeah, but
Okay,
you never
good.
know, you never know. And then I remember my father had an argument with me, Erbasri. He told him, I can tell them I pray with it every morning, it's my prayer book.
Wow.
But Mir Basri was a bit concerned. Mir Basri's wife is my dad's first cousin,
Okay.
so we are all one family. And he was concerned about my father's safety more than anything else. In those days, we were all concerned about our safety. We were not really concerned about any treasures or wealth or land or homes or anything. We just wanted to live, to
Right.
live. Yeah,
Great. Okay,
yeah.
so let's back up and let's talk about your childhood. Tell me when you were born.
I was born in August 48. Time was good in those days. It wasn't like the Farhud, because in Iraq it was up and down. One day it's good and peaceful, and the Jews have got all the freedom of the world, and then the next day everything, and then when it gets better, they forget about the bad days.
Right.
So
You were born right after the war,
I was born
or
after
during
the
it.
war, yeah, after the Second World War, yeah, in 1948. Things were not too bad. The Jews were still there.
Right.
And then, of course,
And then there was the Independence
and there was the
War.
Independence War during that time, and I think everything went ever since they divided Israel. They call it Taksim.
Taksim
This
is meaning
Taksim means
divided.
divided, yeah.
Okay.
I think everything turned topsy-turvy, and then the Jews left, 150,000 of them. And my father at the time built a beautiful house, and he wanted to leave Iraq as well in 51. I was 2 years old, and he wanted to come to England because my maternal grandparents moved to England, immigrated in the 40s to England, so he wanted to join them. But unfortunately, the British government wouldn't give him any visa because they had a law in Iraq. Anybody who leaves Iraq for 3 months, after 3 months, he can't return. They take your nationality, and so the British government didn't want any immigrants in those days, any Jewish immigrants. So my father couldn't get a visa. And then he tried to go to Israel, and then my auntie told him, his sister, she was already there, don't come to Israel, things are really bad, stay in Iraq.
Was she in the
So
Ma'abara?
she was in the Ma'bara, yeah. She was in the Ma'bara, some sort of a Ma'bara she was. And she didn't want him to come because he told her, I will go to Israel and then wait for the visa to come through. I will apply again for another visa, for the visa. And she told him, no, don't come. Of course, a few months later, everybody forgot about the Taksim and everything, started again. He was a merchant in Iraq. He used to deal with textile and everything sort of. Everything, when everything used to go back to normal, they used to forget about everything. He had lots of opportunities to leave Iraq from 1950 to up to 1972. He had many opportunities, but he didn't take
And
those opportunities.
he didn't take them
No,
for
because
any
he was
reason.
happy, he was making a living, we had property, he had his business running, his office running, and we were all happy. We had maids, we had servants, we had a beautiful big house. We had our family. We had one. I remember my childhood was beautiful. Every Saturday we used to go picnicking, and the whole about six, seven convoys. I remember a very happy childhood. The house is full of visitors. It was very nice.
Do you remember the food that your mother cooked?
My mother didn't cook. We used to have nobody. All
You had maids.
my we had maids. We had maids and we had nannies. So the maid used to cook. Of course, he used to cook Iraqi Jewish cooking. I must tell you, it wasn't in my days, but at my mother's days, and of course, everybody had Jewish maids. Nobody brought non-Jews, so they were all Jewish maids. But all these maids left in 1951 to Israel, so everybody was forced to bring non-Jews, and they used to bring Christian maids. They used to come from the north of Iraq, and they were all good people, honest people. They used to work hard. They were very hardworking, and my grandmother used to stay with them in the kitchen and used to train them and teach them the way we eat and the food that we used to eat, and they were very good. So the maid cooked the food. We had the woman to come and wash the clothes because we didn't have washing machines.
Oh,
And
right.
they used to take them 72 steps. They used to go up on the roof. We had like balconies, and they used to hang the clothes there to dry. And we had nannies, we had the cleaners, we had drivers. So
Life was good.
life was very good.
What
Yeah.
business was your father in that you
My
were
father was
well
in
off?
textile. Yeah, was
Textile.
in textile. Yeah, he was in
Importing.
text importing men's clothing to Iraq, to make suits and whatever. So they used to sell it to shops and whatever. So they used to import. Yeah, they used to import. He was like what they call them now today, wholesaler. Yeah, yeah. I think everybody, most of the Jews in Iraq were in import export. Very few were professional. My father-in-law was a doctor. But always my mother tells me in her time when she was trying, when they were trying to marry her, they were trying always to marry her off to a businessman. They never went for professional people because professional people didn't make enough money. So they preferred people in business because people in business made more money than the doctor, than the engineer who was just an employee, whatever it was. Yeah, yeah.
So, did you have relationships, friendships with Muslims and Christians?
In our household, my father was a very strict man. He used to work with Muslims in the office, but he never mixed business with a pleasure. That is only in our household. Yet I know a lot of my friends, they had Muslim friends, and they used to go to their house, visit them. We never had, used to meet them in his office, and that's it. Maybe we mixed a little bit with the neighbor, and that's it, with the neighbors, but we never really had Muslims in our
What
house.
neighborhood did you live in?
I will tell you where I live. My house was right next door to the French embassy.
Wow,
Yeah,
nice.
yeah.
So what's
It
your
was the best.
neighborhood?
It was they used to call it the Street of the Lowy House.
Oh.
Yeah, it was famous because the Lowy family built a big palace there, which unfortunately they hardly lived in it, and it was then let to the French embassy.
Ah, why did
Yeah.
they live in it?
Because they left after the Farhud, I think they emigrated to Canada, and they left it empty. And I knew the house because my dad's cousin, who is related to them somehow by marriage, who is Susan Masri's auntie, she used to come to Iraq, and I was a little girl, and we used to go and visit her in the big house, which was next door to us. It was a palace, a
It
magnificent
was right
place,
next door to you.
right next door. Yeah, no, there was only one house between us. Our next door neighbor was called the Pasha, and then after the Pasha's house was the Lawi house, and everybody, like, if we were sitting in a taxi and we wanted to go, if I wanted to go to my house, I don't tell him I live in such and such a street. I used to tell him, take me to the Lawi street.
I
Yeah,
see.
yeah. So everybody knew, maybe until today, Shara Bet Lawi, they used to call it street, the Lawi street.
The lower street. And then
Yeah.
on the other side of you, you had the French embassy.
We were
Okay.
neighbors. We were
Okay.
neighbors. And then the Pasha house also became part of the French embassy. So we were living right next door to the French embassy. So when, after the 6-day war, there were a lot of securities and whatever, I was even too scared to go to the balcony because we had all security men all over because of the French embassy. And they used to sit outside our front door.
Wow.
And we used
But
to be
isn't
so
that
scared.
safer? Yeah.
No, because these were spies for Saddam, just in
Whoa.
case some of us would go to the embassy after the 6-day war and tell them what's happening to the Jews, look what's happening to us. So we were very, very
Okay.
scared even to look at the embassy. You know, we had to turn our head in a different direction when we used to pass by the embassy. And there were spies all over the place, and they knew us, each one by one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, the Pasha family, is that related to the singer?
No,
Some
no, 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 that's
okay.
different. This is Pasha means he was a very, he came when King Faisal came to Iraq, he was his mentor. And the king used to go and visit them, to be quite honest. And sometimes they used to run out of teacups, and they used to come and borrow the teacups from our house to serve it to the king. You know, the
Amazing.
Jewish homes always had the best silver, had the best china, had the best everything. So his son used to come. He was a partner of, by the way, Naim Dungur. He was called Ahmed. He passed away now. His sister is still alive, and I go and visit her sometimes, and her daughter. They remember us very well. And his mother used to come to our house. They all came from Turkey. Lady, she was a grand lady. I will ignore the phone. She was a grand lady, and
These
she
were
used she
Jews.
was
They were
no,
Jews.
they were Muslims.
They were
They were
Muslims. Okay.
Muslims, but these were the only Muslims that were allowed in our house.
Yes.
Nothing below them. And she used to come to our house, and she was a great friend with my grandmother. And she used to bring with her two handbags. I remember those two handbags as a little girl, 5, 6 year old. And one handbag had her money or whatever. The other handbag had all the keys to the cupboard. She used to lock everything, and nobody was allowed to open her cupboard, the cupboards. So
Of the
of
Pasha.
the Pasha house, yeah.
Yeah.
So everything was under lock and whatever. And I remember once the king or his uncle were coming to visit them, and she was out of the house, and they needed teacups and whatever, and they used to come and borrow, you know, they came and borrowed them from us.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
We have nice memories. These people left before the revolution in 58. Had they been there, they would have killed them as well, because they were part of the royal family. So they always
Wow.
lived abroad. Yeah. They always lived abroad.
And they just vacated their house?
They vacated their house, but look, being a Muslim, you own your property. Your property is still, they can go back to Iraq now and sell their property if they want.
Yeah.
I speak with her, we are in touch with them the whole time. And they still own their property, and they are Muslims. You know, they are not like Jews.
Right.
Yeah.
So, have you tried to get your house back?
No, no. They said fill in forms and whatever, and my husband filled in forms, and I didn't bother because I know it's a waste of time to claim anything. You see, it's a waste of time. They won't bother about the Jews. You know, there are so many Muslims who lost their homes. They'd rather compensate them. Why should they compensate us? We are just a minority. I tell you something about the Iraqi Jews and probably the Jews in general. We never look back.
Mm-hmm.
This is us. We never look back. We always look forward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go back and claim a house which used to be mine 40, 50 years ago. I really couldn't care less. I look for the future. I look for my... This is, I think, even the European Jews, the same thing. They never looked back. They always built. Otherwise, if you look back, you'll never go forward.
Right.
This is our philosophy.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
What school did you go to?
Of course, Jewish school. There were only two Jewish schools. In the primary school, I went to Menachem Saleh Daniel School.
Right.
He bequeathed the school to the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a fantastic kindergarten. We used to have English teachers to teach us English, proper English teachers. We had a fantastic nursery.
Wow.
You can't see a nursery like that matching it today here, you know. I remember when I used to get ill, and my mother wouldn't send me to school, I used to cry. It was that nice.
Wow.
And
you learned?
And I learned up to, we learned French, English, and Arabic to read at the age of 5. And we had French teachers, either from France or from Lebanon, to teach us French. And I stayed in that school until the age of 11 when I did my primary baccalaureate. We used to have the baccalaureate there,
right.
Exam. And then I moved to Frangaini School.
Right.
And I finished Frangaini School.
What are your memories of Frangaini School?
Frangaini School was a good school. It had a very strict
headmaster. Yeah.
It had a very high... level, you know, the level of the education and all that was excellent as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have good memories of that school as well, good and bad memories actually. Bad memories, it was such a strict school, and also as I was growing up, things were changing in Iraq, and
right.
Nobody was in the mood, I wasn't in the mood of studying, and I always wanted to go abroad, so I was never happy there. As a child, I was very happy when I was a child because we had the freedom. But in 1962, they closed when the Ba'ath Party came, either in 62 or 63. When Arif came in 63, he wouldn't allow the Jews to travel. He wouldn't allow anything. We were we were held prisoners. So this is how I grew from the age of 13 up to the age of when I finished the school as well. It was a completely different atmosphere to our childhood memories.
Right.
My memories then as a teenager, I started thinking of myself, of my future. As a child, you don't think of the consequences of a bad government or whatever. But as I became a teenager, yes, I was thinking very seriously about myself, really, and my future
mm-hmm.
in Iraq.
And now... When did your family start thinking about leaving Iraq?
Oh, of course, after the Six-Day War. My
yeah.
father closed his office, his business. He hid in the house. He was too scared to venture out.
Uh-huh.
A lot of his colleagues in the business who remained in the business, they took him. They were jailed. So, you know, thank God my father wasn't. My father-in-law was in jail. Yeah.
What happened?
Twice. Because once they accused him of escaping from Iraq, planning to escape and whatever, and they put him for 2-3 months in jail.
Right. Was he
yeah.
planning to escape?
Once he was planning to escape, they caught a lot of Jews, 40 of them. They brought them back in buses in the north of Iraq. They put them in jail for 2 weeks and then they released them. And then, no, somebody accused him of planning to escape. Any accusation to put a Jew in jail, it doesn't, you
But
don't
he
need,
wasn't one
you
of
don't,
those
yeah,
people,
no,
right?
you don't need to plan anything. You, as long as you are a Jew, anything, just the slightest thing, they can take you to jail just for being a Jew. Yeah. Your crime is being a Jew. I mean, after the 6 Day War, when I used to walk in the street, they used to call me Golda Meir. Every woman, every girl was Golda Meir, and every man was Moshe Dayan. And Moshe Dayan and Golda Meir, they were the two biggest enemies, because they couldn't take it in their head. They couldn't believe what happened, how Israel can win the whole. They used to say Israel is only that tiny, small, little, whatever they used to call it, illegitimate, they used to call it,
Illegitimate, yeah.
illegitimate. Country, and all the Arabs will get united, and we can take it just like that. In half an hour, we can conquer and we can take the land back. And then they just couldn't believe it. This is why my friends were hanged and killed and whatever after the 6 Day War, because they wanted vengeance. And who, we were their victims.
So describe to me the events of 1969 and the hangings and who your friends were.
Yeah, I wanted to. 1969, I graduated from Frank Ayini School in 1967. It was during the 6 Day War, and they wouldn't allow Jews to go to university.
Right.
We were not allowed to go to university during that year. So anybody who graduated with me that year was not allowed to go to university. So we stayed at home. But being Jews, we never really stayed at home. I studied by correspondence. I studied a French degree by correspondence with the Sorbonne University. Each one of us did something, just to occupy the time, to pass the
Yeah.
time. And then, unfortunately, as well, the Jewish schools couldn't get any more teachers from abroad, and funds were running short as well, because they confiscated part of the sum of the money that used to provide for the schools. It was like a trust, and the government tried to get hold of the trust. I don't know the nitty-gritty of all that. Meir Basri, he passed away, but he knew at the time. So they couldn't get any teachers, so they asked all of us who graduated that year to go and teach. So they asked me to go and teach French to the little kids at my school, my primary school. A lot of my friends, the ones who were good in physics, they taught physics. The ones who were good in chemistry, they taught chemistry. The people who taught math, the people who were good in math, they taught math. So I went and taught French, and it was in 1969. I remember going to the school in the morning. And believe it or not, the teachers who were still the non-Jews, Iraqi teachers who taught me as a kid, they were still their teachers at the school. And they all believed that these were actual spies when they hanged them, all these kids. I knew them all, the kids, the men, because we were such a small community. And I remember walking into when we first went to the school in the morning, we didn't know of the hanging. We knew nothing of the hanging. Then we heard the bodies were dangling in the middle of the square. And of course, my little brother was still at school. He was about 7, 8 years old. And my father came straight away and picked me and my brother up from school, because he was worried just in case they will come to the school, burn the school down or whatever. So we all closed. The school was shut down. Everybody went to their house, and we went and turned the TV on, and we could see everything on television, televised. And of course, later on, one of my classmates, Qashqush family, they went and killed him, killed his brother, killed his sister,
You said
killed his parents.
Qashqush family.
Qashqush family, yeah. I met the sister after 35 years. There was a reunion, Frank Ayini reunion, last year in Canada. And I met the sister. And
She was the only survivor.
She left before they killed them, 6 months before they killed them. She, when they killed them, they were giving passports to the Jews. So she left 6 months before they were supposed to leave. They killed them the day before they were due to leave Iraq.
In what
Their
year?
suitcases. I think it's after. I think I was here in 72. I think they killed them in 73. I think they were killed in 73. I'm not too sure.
Okay.
One of the sisters survived because Joyce, who you are meeting tomorrow,
Yes.
She was her classmate. She can tell you better, tell you the story better than me. She told her, come and say goodbye to your friends at university, because after we left and after the hanging, they eased a lot of the things. You know, they because of the pressure from the outside world, they gave us passports, they let the Jewish kids go to university, whatever. So Joyce and her and that the only surviving sister went to university. So Joyce told her, why don't you come in the morning, say goodbye, because you are leaving the next day. And this is what saved her life. Otherwise, she would have been with the rest of her family and killed and massacred there and then. So when she came back, she saw blood and she saw God knows what. She didn't see the bodies, but
wow.
Joyce can tell you something. And she went, affected, yeah, mentally affected.
How many people were killed in a family?
Five members, the father, the mother, two brothers, and one of the brothers was a classmate of mine, and one younger sister. Yeah, awful.
So
yeah.
What happened? The police just came in.
You know what happened? Because the day before, Israel killed, I don't know what, a village, Palestinian village or something. They used to live on the main road, I think, and there were Palestinians. I don't know what they were across the street. They knew it was a Jewish family.
Right.
So they went when they went and killed them. The sister who I met last year, the one who left 6 months before. She told me Saddam was amongst the people who were doing the killing.
Oh,
I don't think Saddam was. I don't think so, no. I don't think Saddam was. But they said, we are killing you as a revenge of what Israel did the day before. They went, it was, I don't know, in 1970. No, after. There was in Lebanon, there was, I don't know what it was. Look it up. Joyce will tell you.
Okay.
They told them, we are killing you. We are revenging our whatever.
Okay.
Israel went to, I think Sharon was involved. I don't know what it was. There was something in Lebanon. Whatever, one of those things. Maybe they killed a few Palestinians, like what they are doing today.
Yeah.
And they went the next day. This is the Jewish family. Easy target. Let's go and kill them.
Yeah,
yeah. So they must have, they killed a lot of us. They killed about 85, 90 people, I think.
In
those years, yeah.
Like,
yeah, oh, just
after
nothing.
After the Six-Day War.
Yeah, after the Six, yeah, yeah. After the Six-Day War until, 74, 73, yeah, yeah. The killing, after we left, the killing carried, they carried on with the killing, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we were very lucky. And the reason why they gave us passports, we were the first people, first of all, they released the passports for the people who were over 60. That's what they said. We will only give, so my grandmother left in the summer. My grandmother left, she was over 70, the summer of 71.
Okay.
In September she left. Now, the Jews were desperate.
Mm-hmm.
Things were getting slightly better. They were not sort of, you know, because of the outside pressure. So we decided, only the women and girls like me, my age, teenagers, we went to the Minister of Interior. Of course, I went without telling my father. If my father knew I was going to the Ministry of Interior, he would have killed me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we didn't tell. My mother came with me. And I went with a lot of my friends and a lot of families, women, only the women. The men wouldn't venture, wouldn't dare go to the Ministry of Interior. We were so desperate. And we all had letters with us asking the Minister of Interior to grant us passports to leave Iraq. When you are in a desperate, that was in 1971. We went there in December. I must tell you this. We went end of December or beginning of December. We didn't go just like that because things were slightly getting better with the with the Jewish community. They were not sort of jailing us or something. They gave us a little bit of encouragement to do something like that.
Right.
So I went, there were about 20, 25 women. And there was me, there was a few other girls my age who came with those letters.
And
we thought we all went to the Ministry of Interior. And we stood there, we told the police there, we want to see the minister. We had nothing to lose.
Right.
So we told him, we want to see the minister. He went in, came back, they said, yeah. He said, yeah, okay, the minister would like to see you. So all the women wanted to go and see the minister. He said, hold on, I can't take everybody. I have to take a few. So I went in, and another girl who is married, she also went in with me. She lives in Golders Green, and few women went in, about 3-4 women went in. And I remember one of them, she lives in Canada now, she kissed the minister. Her son is a, she's a Bechor, her name is Bechor, from the Bechor family. She's married to a Bechor. She kissed his shoes as she went in. She kissed the minister's shoes. I remember that, I can never forget it for the rest of my life. She went in and we went in. I stood there. I wasn't going to kiss his hand or anything. She kissed his shoes and she told him, my master, Sayyidi or something, sir, we want to leave. The minister stood up and he told us, I have no objection. I don't care. I will give you all passports. Give me your letters. Give me your letters. So we all gave him our letters. So in every letter, it was we told him, this is the members of our family who request a passport. It was a request for a passport.
Right.
So we told him.
All organized this together. All
we all organized to go, yes, to the ministry.
Together.
And remember, in those days, we didn't have any telephones. We didn't have any. The telephones were cut off. But from word of mouth, we all lived in next to each other practically. Mm-hmm. So whoever heard and whoever wanted to come, came. And there were, about there were 15, 20 women, which was a lot. And there was only youngsters. There was me. There was another girl. 2-3 other girls as well came. So this is why they picked up me. They picked another girl and they picked few other women. And so he told us, give me all your letters. So he took my letter. He took everybody. So he looked at me and he said, look, my sister. He called me my sister. We don't care where. Even if you want to go to Israel, you can go to Israel.
Wow.
Yeah, he said, just like that. We have no objection of you leaving. We will give you tomorrow. You go to the office where they give you passports. You go tomorrow and you will take your passport.
Wow.
You know how many times they said that and they never performed. So we thought it was one of their performances. So we gave him the letter. We told him, thank you very much. Whether excitement or disappointment or whatever, we got used to it because they did it so many times with us.
Right.
So we went back, and then all what we hear the next day that they used to publish names on the wall and put them on the wall, like you see results, exam results.
Yeah.
These people, this family, my father's family, and myself, and my two brothers, and my mother, and whoever was there, whoever gave the letter to the minister, their names were published on the wall. They can come and take passports. So when I went back home, I remember it was a Saturday, because Saturday is a day of work in Baghdad. They used to work. They used to close on a Friday. Saturday was just a normal day of work. I remember I went in with my mom. The taxi dropped us in my house, and I told my father, guess where I went? I went to the Ministry of Interior, and this is what the minister said. I had to tell him that because, we came back safely, nothing happened to us. So I told him, look, we went to the Ministry of Interior, and this is what the minister said. My father said, he's laughing at you. Can't be serious. All of a sudden, we hear the next day our names were all published. So my father goes to the place and he brings the passports. I can tell you within a week. It was this is why we left on the 2nd of January 1972. The passports were granted probably around the 28th, 27th. We didn't even wait for a week. We had all our suitcases packed, whatever we could take, because you don't know. Maybe a week later they can change their mind and they can stop. They can take these passports, withdraw these passports, and you can't travel. So when they gave us when they granted those names, whoever wanted to leave went to that office and applied for a passport. So a lot of my husband's family left at that time. They started giving us. And then I remember a few months later, they stopped it again.
Wow.
Yeah, they stopped it on everybody. They stopped it. And then
they opened and closed.
So it's, you have to grab
the opportunity
when it comes.
So you came to England.
We came directly to England. It was the second week of a flight. We just started. It's a direct flight from Baghdad to London, 4.5 hours.
Right.
The journey took us only 4.5 hours because I remember when we used to come to England as a little girl, it used to take us 18 hours.
Wow. Because
I
you had to
remember
stop in
I
different
stopped in
parts.
different places. There was, it was the old-fashioned airplane. We used to come very often because my mother had her parents in, and her family used to live in England. So I even stayed in a boarding school for a while in England as a child. And so
What was that flight like, leaving and
the
stopping? How
flight.
did
Oh,
you feel
my
that time?
father. I mean, did Susan give you the speech that I did?
She did.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, I want to ask about
Yes,
something that you said there. I'll get back to that.
we left on that flight, and I still feel very emotional about it. My father told me, until we leave
The gate?
the whatever, when we see the White Mountains of Lebanon, this is when we say we are free, because they can still stop the airplane and bring it back.
Right.
And I remember Saddam's guys who came up to the airplane to look at us. They were not allowed. It was a BOAC flight, and it was a foreign flight. If you go up in an airplane, you don't have a passport. It's like you are going into a foreign embassy. You see, embassy is like if you go to an embassy, the
Like an
embassy, the land,
airport.
you are, yeah, exactly, you are like in a foreign country. The flight was BOAC, and Saddam's men came to the airplane, and they looked at us one by one. Look, we're going to call you to come back down. This is the terror, to terrify us. And as it happened, they called one of my, he used to be a classmate of mine. He lives now in Israel. They called him, and he had to leave the plane.
Oh
He
my
went
goodness.
down. Yeah,
And
he
he left
went.
his family on the plane?
No, his family didn't leave at that time. It was only him who left. His family left later on. They took him. I don't know on what sort of a pretext or excuse, but I know a week later he came on the same flight. But just to terrorize you, just to
Right.
shake you, and I remember, all our faces, we were sitting, it's like Gestapo. You're looking at Gestapo, exactly the same feeling as Gestapo. When are they going to call us back,
Wow.
get out of the plane, you bastards, you whatever, we won't let you out of the country, you what they can tell you whatever they want. We've been through a lot of things. I can write a book about what I've been. I remember even as a child, and we say during the kingdom we had the freedom and whatever. I remember when any Jew who used to travel, when I used to go with my mother abroad away, they used to put me in a small room. I remember I was 5 year old. My brother was in diapers, and they used to undo his diaper just in case my mother hid money or jewelry in his diaper, because we were Jews.
Right.
And I remember even myself, they used to take my coat off. They used to search the hem of my coat, of my dress, just in
Wow.
case anything was hidden.
So this was in
This was in the
the
50s.
fifties.
This was in the 50s.
Right.
The only good period where we felt we were equal to the rest of the people was during Qasim. Qasim took out all these rules. He really said the Jews, as long as they are Iraqis, they are equal to the rest of the population, because he was very. He had a lot of communist views, and he believed in democracy. He believed in socialism. He was a socialist more than anything else. He wasn't a dictator.
Right.
Unfortunately, he didn't last very long. But I remember during the rule of Qasim, all these rules were
Wiped
gone.
out, but
Went,
that was
yeah.
only 58 to 63.
That was only, unfortunately, 58 to 63. Not very long. A lot of people, a lot of Jews, took advantage of that period. It was really the golden period of the Jews, and they left Iraq. And some people forgot about all their miseries, and because business flourished and whatever, my father was amongst them, stayed in Iraq. Yeah, but
Interesting.
the wise people left. They said, this is a golden opportunity. They sold their houses, they took their money, they sold their property, they took their belongings and left.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so they were able to take money with
They
them.
took money. You had to smuggle the money. You were only allowed a certain amount of money, but there were smugglers always, and they used to smuggle the money
So
out.
do you regret leaving as late as you did?
I regret, and I think my father also regretted. Yeah,
Yeah.
he had a golden opportunity in the 60s. My mother was here in England, stayed for 6 months. He nearly left Iraq. He nearly left Iraq, and then, I don't know what goes in their
More comfortable,
mind.
you lived a comfortable life, so it's probably hard to give it up.
Exactly. For him, it was very hard to give it up. Yeah. And
Right.
I realized how comfortable our life was when we came over here.
Yeah.
I realized,
Why did you
it.
realize? Why did you realize?
Anything. My mother couldn't cook, didn't know how to do things. It was a different environment. You had to do everything yourself. It was a big upheaval.
Yeah.
It was a very big upheaval. Different social life, different friends, different environment, different weather, different climate. It wasn't easy. And I was young at the time when I came here. I mean, I feel sorry for my dad, my grandmother, who had to adapt to all that kind of life. It wasn't easy for them.
So how old were you when
I
you
left,
came
I
here?
was 23.
You're 23.
Yeah, I was
So you met
23.
your husband here?
My husband, believe it or not, my husband came 10 years before me. He came as a 12-year-old child. He was with me. He was my classmate at school. And
Daniel, Menachem Daniel.
Menachem Daniel. And his father sent him a lot of boys at the age of 12, once they did the baccalaureate, because they had no future in Iraq. They were thinking that the parents one day will follow the kids. Few kids, they used to send them to boarding school in England. So he was sent to a boarding school, and he couldn't see his family from the age of 13, because there were no passports, until the age of 23. So as a child, he lived all on his own.
Wow.
All on his own. During the school holidays, when the passport, when you, they used to give you passports and you were allowed back with, he used to go and spend the holidays with his parents. But then after 63, when Jews were not allowed to leave, he couldn't go back to Iraq.
So he
So he
stayed
was
on.
stuck. As a kid, as a teenager, he lived on his own. He used to go to boarding school during the summer holiday. He used to stay with an aunt of his for a while. He stayed during the summer holiday. Then afterwards, he learned to cope by himself, you know.
What is your husband's name?
Ramzi Hakim. Yeah,
Ramzi
he's a
Hakim.
chartered accountant. Yeah, his parents left with us.
Okay.
Yeah, they left 6 weeks, 7 weeks before. They left in December, I think. We left in January.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And how many children do you have?
I have three, one boy and two daughters.
What are their names? I'll include it in the
David,
book.
Karen, and Michelle.
Do they all live in London?
They all live in London. This is Karen, who
Okay.
lives now. No, sorry. Karen now lives in New York, but she's
Uh-huh.
going to come back to London. She is a chartered accountant. She works for Deloitte. And she was sent by the firm for a couple of years to
Sure.
New York. And I'm going to New York on Friday, and she's going to
Wow.
come back with me. Her contract finished. She doesn't want to extend it. I think she wants to come back.
Ah.
I have another daughter, Michelle. Michelle, this is our wedding photos. Yeah, this is Michelle.
Uh-huh.
Michelle went to Bristol University. She did politics, political science, and
Uh-huh.
she went to Bristol, and she went to Chicago University as well. She lives here and she works here. And this is Karen, who lives in New York, but she's gonna come back. So, but my son lives there, and
New
his wife
York.
is American. Yeah,
Okay.
yeah.
Do your children speak Arabic?
They understand Arabic very well. I made sure they understand Arabic very well. Otherwise, they get bored when I speak with my husband, when I speak with my mother.
Yeah.
So they understand Arabic like I understand it.
But in the house, you'll speak
I
English
speak
with them.
English with them. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. But
What about?
I speak Arabic with them, they understand Arabic. Yeah, but they wouldn't dare speak it because of the accent. They cannot. Yeah.
What is their connection to their Iraqi roots besides the language? How do they feel about it? Do they,
I tell
do you
you
tell
what,
them the stories like this?
they know the stories. They don't really feel all that much connected, unfortunately,
Yeah.
because for a long time we tried not to speak about it.
Why? Because you wanted to start a new
I
life?
wanted to start, yeah, like all of us didn't want to speak about it. The time when we started to speak about it nonstop, and like you, one of them who is trying to write about us, and many writers and many lots of details came out about us, was after the fall of Saddam. All of a sudden, once
Yeah.
Saddam was, I don't know why, it was like a psychological something in our
Everybody wants
brain.
to hear.
Everybody wanted to, it was like an explosion. Everybody just wanted to speak about the whole thing, about their the whole time it was suppressed in our brain, and all of a sudden, I don't know what it was, we felt like we want to be like a relief. We just want to relieve ourselves from all the pressure and the night. Believe it or not, I still, like my other friends as well, we still see nightmares that we are stuck in Iraq and we can't leave
Really?
Iraq. This is my nightmare, and whenever I see a nightmare, this is my nightmare. I see I'm stuck and I can't get out, and whatever it is, and then I wake up and I touch the pillow and I say, thank God I'm not in Iraq. You know, this is how I don't know, after the fall of Saddam, we all wanted, all of a sudden, everybody was, A, interested in us, and number two, we wanted to speak about the whole thing. But the whole time, for 40 years, nobody knew about us. Nobody knew about our stories. No, we were not interested in telling anybody about our stories. So,
Did many journalists come to you after the fall of Saddam, or did you mostly begin talking just because
no,
you had?
a lot of people, a lot of journalists, they wanted to make films about us.
But also
Everybody was interested because nobody knew about us. Because my son is married now to an American girl. Her parents came from the Ukraine, also Jewish immigrants like us. They left in 79. They never knew that Iraqi Jew, there were Jews in Iraq, that Jews existed in Iraq. Whereas now, all of a sudden, everybody's talking about us. You know, they know that we've been there. We were there for 2,500 years, 3,000 years. We were there before the Arabs,
Right.
and the Arabs were the invaders. We were the origins, the original people,
Right.
inhabitants of Iraq.
That's
Yeah.
great. So, why do you feel that it's important, or do you feel it's important, I believe that you do, to keep the memory alive of Iraqi Jews and
But
to
how long can we keep the memory alive? I can't see that the memory, because I tell you what, the big difference is now, I can see like the in-laws of my son, they are Ukrainians. They can
Right.
still go back to the Ukraine. They can keep their roots. They can keep their history. They can go and visit their family in the Ukraine and come back. Whereas with us, what do I want to keep it forever? I can't go back to Iraq. My children will never go back to Iraq with this, you know, what? There's no point. I
Right.
would like to close the book and forget about the whole thing. This is my attitude towards the whole thing.
Right.
Because I feel, what's the point? Who's going
Yeah.
to go back to Iraq? Iraq is a different case. Whereas even the European Jews, after I've been to Auschwitz, I've seen Auschwitz, I know what. Even them now, the German Jews in Israel, they can still go back to Germany. They can visit Germany. They can come back. They are free to go to Europe, to Hungary, to Poland, to whatever. Whereas us, there is no point in keeping the Arabic language, in keeping okay, we have a history, they can read it in the books, but they're not going to go back and see where I was born, which school I went to. Everything is destroyed. Everything is gone forever. Wiped out.
Forever, I mean, maybe 50 years down the line,
Who
things could
knows?
change.
I don't know.
Right, we don't
Nobody
know.
knows. Nobody knows. Let's see what's happening now.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Linda. That was
Yeah.
really, really good.
Yeah.
Now, is there something that I didn't ask you that you want to tell me about? Some particular stories, family stories?
I don't
Or
know. There
events?
are so many things I can tell you about, but you know, we lived. I must tell you. I mean, I have good memories as a child from Iraq, and like everybody else will tell you, we had a wonderful time. We lived a good life. You know, but what can we do? You
Came to
know.
an end.
Yeah, it came to an end abruptly. You know, sometimes when I look at the picture of my ancestors, I say I wished I lived with them at their time, because they had much better time than us, I feel.
Yeah.
There was a lot more, their future was a lot more secure, their life was a lot more secure than us.
That was during the Ottoman
It
Empire.
was during the Ottoman Empire. Yeah.
What do you know about their lives during the Ottoman Empire? What do you
They were, you can see it was a, they had a great life. You
Right.
know, they had a great life. You know, I look at them, and they were. I remember my grandmother used to tell me during the Ottoman Empire on Shabbat, they used to go picnicking at the other side of the river. There was a mosque. I don't know what it was called. On the ground of the mosque, the Jews used to go and eat. You know, we call it the eggs and the aubergine and the
Right.
bread. They used to picnic on the grounds of the mosque. And the Muslims never felt this is he is a Jew, he is a Muslim. They were all equal. They respected them, everything. But everything came to them as well. Once the British went in, then they went, you know, the rule, divide and rule. This is
Right.
what they caused. They caused divisions between the religions, between everything. Also, the It was the British, I feel, during the First World War, the divide and rule thing. I always say I wish the Ottoman. Even I went to Istanbul and I spoke with a few Turkish people and I used to tell them because I went to see the palace of all the Otto, you know, of the Ottoman. I went to see their palaces and the way they used. And I used to meet some Turkish people and I used to tell them I wish the Ottomans never entered the war. We would have all been still under the Ottoman Empire, all one big empire, and that's it. No Palestine, and no Iraq, and no Israel, and no whatever. Everybody belonged to the Ottoman Empire. These people, they all had Turkish passports. Even my grandmother had a Turkish passport. Yeah.
Amazing. What other stories did your grandmother tell you or your grandfather about
I
what
lived with
happened
my
to you?
grandmother all throughout my life, actually. We lived under the same roof, and when she came to England, she lived a few doors away from me. So I have more memories of her than any member of the family because, you met my cousin Susan was born in America. Even her own daughters didn't live for a very long time with her. And I wish I could ask her more questions. You know, now I am like more. I used to look at this picture, and I never questioned her about it, about the people there. I learned about them afterwards, later on in life. You know, I have
From
a
different people.
from different people of from you know like my I have a still an auntie who is 92, lives in New York, and she told me all the stories about these people. So all what I knew that this is her grandmother, this is her great grandmother and her great aunt and whatever. But each one of those you see them, they all have a story. Some of them were in the army during the Ottoman Empire, some of them were bankers, some of them, you know, each one had a story.
Do you
And you
still
can
have
tell from the jewelry they were wearing. You know, they had a
a good life?
good life. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Linda. That was so
Yeah,
good.
you're
That was
welcome.
so good.
I don't
Thank
know. I
you.
hope so.